Everyone can see, right? And if people come late, too bad, right? They should have come early. They can stand up and watch. So this is a pastime that involves Lord Balaram, because we were observing Balaram's appearance. Earlier in the week, last week, 1 week ago, coming up soon for Krishna's Janmashtami. So I was thinking on the way over of a pastime that in a very unique way involves Lord Balaram. There are two pastimes, that at least two pastimes that I'm well aware of, that Balaram was deliberately, by Leela arrangement, he wasn't present. Can anyone think of, besides this one, Balaram was not present? What's the other one where Balaram was not present? Huh? Brahma Vimohan Leela. Exactly. What is the Brahma Vimohan Leela? Yeah. Okay. It wouldn't have worked if Balaram was with the cowherd boys. Because who can steal Balaram and put him in a cave for a year? So he wasn't there. He was at home because it was his birthday, Balaram's appearance day. But here's another one where Balaram was not present. Now it doesn't say, at least I have not found, where it says why he was not present, but he was not present. Maybe he wasn't feeling well, so-called. But in any case, we don't want that on. We want it off. Okay. This is the pastime where Balaram was not present, but then he gets involved in the pastime later. The subduing of the Kaliya serpent. And there are lots of wonderful artistic illustrations of this wonderful pastime of Krishna's, just like our deity Nitai Gora Nataraj. He's the best of dancers, but Krishna is also the best of dancers, and he showed this in the Kaliya Damana Leela. As it says in this first slide, very early in the morning, very early, much earlier than usual, Krishna and the cowherd boys, minus Lord Balaram, went in a different route than they usually go. There was a kind of pattern that they would follow, but this particular morning, the cowherd boys were feeling very thirsty. And so they went first thing in the morning to the river Jamuna. And Krishna, normally they follow Krishna. Wherever Krishna goes, the cowherd boys go. Wherever Krishna and the cowherd boys go, the cows go. But this morning was different in another way. They went ahead. And Krishna was behind. And Lord Sri Krishna, seeing that the river Yamuna had been contaminated by the black snake, Kaliya, he had this desire to purify. So it was a leela orchestrated by Krishna's desire to free the river Yamuna from the poison of the Kaliya serpent. So the leela was orchestrated for that purpose. Within the river Jamuna, there was a very, very nasty, vicious, poisonous snake named Kaliya. So poisonous that the water in the lake where he was residing, it boiled, it bubbled, and fumes came out of the water. The fumes were so bad that when birds would fly over the lake, the fumes would kill them and they'd fall into the lake dead. Very, very poisonous. So the cowherd boys and the cows got to the river Yamuna first, the very place that Krishna wanted to purify, and when they drank the water of that very contaminated lake, they fell to the ground unconscious. And when Krishna is described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when he saw the boys lying in that condition, he's the personality of Godhead, don't forget, but when he saw them lying in that condition, he became overwhelmed. He became stunned, seeing them lying as if dead. He was feeling an intense feeling of love and affection for what looked like his departed dear friends and cows. Krishna, the internal potency of Krishna moves, as do all the potencies, move according to his desire. And his desire is to experience happiness of love, and the happiness of love of bereavement of a lost dear friend is one of those intensifications of love. So the Yogamaya potency deluded for a moment the supremely omniscient personality of Godhead, so that he could enter into those feelings of deep separation from the cowherd boys and the cows. But very quickly, that Yogamaya potency, well, let me, another Krishna book quiz question. There was another circumstance where something very similar happened. That is, the Yogamaya potency overwhelmed Krishna, and he was feeling great separation from the cowherd boys. What was that one? Agasura. Who was Agasura? I'm looking at you. Do you know who is Agasura? Can you say? A big snake. Could you describe a little bit more about Agasura? What did he look like? Yeah, his mouth was so big it looked like a giant cave. In fact, it said the upper jaw was touching the clouds. Big cave. So when the cowherd boys came along the path and they saw this huge cave, they said, "We never saw this cave here before. Let's go check out this cave." And then as they started walking towards the cave, there was this bad fishy smell. So then he understood, wait a minute, this isn't a cave after all. This is a big serpent lying in the road. But anyway, Krishna's always protected us, so let's go explore. And off they went inside the mouth of the Agasura demon. Krishna, seeing the cowherd boys entering the Agasura demon, became overwhelmed with concern for the cowherd boys, but not the kind of concern that we might have. His concern was, the cowherd boys won't be able to bear separation from me, not being able to see me once they enter the cave, so-called cave, the mouth of the Agasura demon. So he wanted to call out to them, but it was too late. They had already entered. And then the Yogamaya potency again restored Krishna's balance, and he then made a plan of how to destroy the Agasura demon instead of the other way around. So the Yogamaya potency acts upon Krishna also, not only upon the devotees of Krishna, to enhance the mood of love that is there in the exchange between Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So simply by his glance, we know that the glance of Krishna is very powerful. The glance of the portion of the plenary portion of Krishna, Mahavishnu, is so powerful that it brings about the whole cosmic manifestation, and not only just one universe, but unlimited numbers of universes. Just the glance. There's a description in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna is departing Hastinapur, and then he's going into Dwarka. And as he's entering into Dwarka, the chaste ladies of Dwarka were up on the rooftops because they didn't want to mix with the men who were on the street. And Krishna saw them. And just by seeing them, the description is, by his seeing them, Krishna entered into their eyes and entered into their hearts, and they felt as satisfied as if they had embraced Krishna. Just by Krishna's glance. What to speak of the sidelong glance of Krishna seeing the gopis out of the corner of his eyes. That filled the hearts of the gopis. Krishna's glance is very powerful. There's different versions of the Ramayana. One version of the Ramayana is when he wanted the Samudra to come from the ocean and to assist him to cross to Lanka. One version says he fired arrows. Another version is that he glanced. And the glance of Lord Ram was so powerful that the ocean began to boil. So the Lord's glance is very powerful. And in this case, he brought the cowherd boys and the calves and the cows back to life. Just by his glance. Now Krishna had his purpose. He wanted to purify the water of the river Jamuna, specifically the lake. And so he made a plan how to purify the lake from the deadly poison of Kaliya. It's said in the Bhagavatam that some distance, some mile or some distance all around the lake, everything was dead just from the poison of the Kaliya serpent. And here's the history of who was Kaliya before he was Kaliya. This is from the Garga Samhita. Long before, there were two sages named Vedashira and Ashvashira. And in the course of traveling, Ashvashira came to a very beautiful forest high up on a mountaintop. And he saw, this is a very nice place to perform meditation and austerities. And he was very happy to see there's another sage there named Vedashira. So Ashvashira suggested to Vedashira that why don't we have some association here on this wonderful mountainside. But Vedashira was proprietary. There's not room for both of us on this mountain. You're going to have to find another mountain. And Ashvashira said, wait, you're a sage. You know it's not your mountain. Everything belongs to Vishnu. He's the creator of everything, and it's his property. So how can you say, my mountain? And they had a sage debate, a little heated argument. And as the argument ensued, the visiting sage cursed the resident sage. You're so envious. You should become a serpent. Because serpents are known to be very envious. Without provocation, they'll bite. So watch out. And after Vedashira was cursed, he cursed Ashvashira to become a crow and fall to the earth planet. And Vedashira took birth as Kaliya, the son of Kashyapa, and Kadru. Kashyapa and Kadru. Who's Kashyapa? Kashyapa is one of the original sons of Lord Brahma. You know? You want to say? Kashyapa. You forgot. You're not sure. The firstborn beings from Lord Brahma were the four Kumaras. Following the four Kumaras, Lord Shiva. Following Lord Shiva, Swayambhuva Manu and his wife. Swayambhuva Manu and Sutapa. Is that right? Satarupa, yeah. And then the ten sages, and Kashyapa was one of the ten sages. Daughters were born of Kardama Muni, and daughters were then entrusted to the sages. So Kadru was one of the daughters entrusted to Kashyapa. And their service was to populate the universe that Lord Brahma had just created, and they had powers. They had a big gene pool, is what Sariputta said. They were able to produce species other than their own. In any case, a group of serpents were produced from Kashyapa and Kadru, and one of them was Kaliya. As Kaliya developed, he became a very envious person. There was an arrangement where because Garuda, one of his natural foods or prey, is snakes. So the snakes made offerings to Garuda. When it was Kaliya's turn to make the offering, being so envious, he thought, why should he get the offering? And he ate the offering himself. So Garuda became very angry and started to attack Kaliya, and Kaliya fled. And as he was fleeing, he went here and he went there and he went in all so many different directions, and finally Kaliya took shelter of Ananta and requested Ananta, help, help, what should I do, what should I do? And Ananta suggested that there was one place that you can go where Garuda won't go, and that is a particular lake in the river Jamuna. And here's why. Because one time, this is disclosed by Garuda to Kaliya, Shobari Muni was a great sage who was a mystic, and he was able to meditate underwater. And when he was one time meditating underwater, Garuda came and he took some of the fish that were there under the water. And when Shobari Muni saw him taking fish, he cursed Garuda, you never come back here again. And if you come back here again, you'll immediately die. Now, Garuda can't be cursed any more than sometimes there's some sayings that we won't even repeat where some great personality is cursed. Like Narada was cursed by Durvas Muni. Narada has a spiritual body. He doesn't have a material body. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. Who can curse a pure devotee of the Lord? Not possible. But Narada accepted. He said, this is very nice. Now I can continue to travel. The curse was you can't stay any one place for more than 3 days. So that's perfect for a sannyasi. I'll just continue to travel. So in any case, Garuda informed Kaliya that Shobhri Muni had cursed Garuda, "You cannot go to this lake or you will die. If Garuda ever enters this lake and eats the fish here, he immediately loses life. So go to that lake, Kaliya, and you'll be safe from Garuda." And so he went to that lake and he made it his residence. And this goes back into Satya Yuga. Long, long ago, for all that period of time, Kaliya was residing in this particular part of the lake. And because he was residing there for a long time, it had become very, 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 very poisonous. I'll just read the text. "The water in the lake was very deep, and like the immovable depths of the ocean, could not be agitated. Approaching the lake was difficult, for its shores were covered with holes in which serpents lived. All around the lake was a fog generated by the fire of the serpent's poison. And this powerful fire would at once burn up every blade of grass that happened to fall into the water." For a distance of 8 miles from the lake, the atmosphere was most unpleasant. That's why Krishna wanted to go there and clean up the place. Environmental Protection Agency. So Krishna climbed up a nearby Kadamba tree, and there's a little story behind the nearby Kadamba tree. All the other trees in the area had died from the poison of the lake caused by Kaliya, except this one Kadamba tree. And that's because when Garuda went there pursuing Kaliya but didn't enter the lake, he placed some nectar on the tree, and so the tree endured. And it is said the tree that's there today at Kaliya Ghat is the same tree for that very reason. So Krishna tightened his belt, getting ready for action, climbed up the Kadamba tree and jumped from a limb of the Kadamba tree into the Kaliya lake. There's the Kadamba tree, Krishna climbing up the Kadamba tree. There's Kaliya and the palace of Kaliya deep within the lake. Here's the cowherd boys upside down. Here's the cowherd boys right side up in the cows. And Krishna jumped into the lake. Since Krishna had descended from the spiritual world specifically to subdue envious demons, the Lord immediately climbed to the top of a very high Kadamba tree and prepared himself for battle. He tightened his belt, slapped his arms, and then jumped into the poisonous water and made a big splash, because he's as heavy as the heaviest. And you drop a big heavy object into a lake and it makes a big splash. In fact, the lake overflowed. And when Krishna entered the lake, Kaliya inside the lake became furious. "Who has entered my lake?" When Krishna entered the lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to the distance of 100 bow lengths. That sounds pretty big distance. "This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength." And Kaliya came rising to the surface, showing his hoods, because he had a lot of hoods, not just one, 10,000 hoods, 100 of them most prominent, but so many hoods. And looking at Krishna, he became so envious that fire came from his mouth. And with all of his might, he tried to strike the body of Krishna. The text reads, Kaliya saw that Sri Krishna, who wore yellow silken garments, was very delicate, his attractive body shining like a glowing white cloud, his chest bearing the mark of Srivasa, his smiling face beautifully, and his feet resembling the whorl of a lotus flower. He tried to bite the Lord and then wrapped him in his coils. And there's lots of paintings of Krishna being wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. Artists seem to like this particular section. Here's the serpent with his palace and his queens, and there's Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And meanwhile, there's the residence of Vrindavan. At least later on, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and Balaram came, but that's later. So he is wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. Seeing the inauspicious omens, the residents rushed to the banks of the Jamuna in search of their dearmost Krishna. Now there's one in Jiva Goswami's Gopal Champu. He describes one Brahmana was dispatched from the Kaliya lake to go all the way back to Nandagram and give the alarming news, not that we're in danger, but Krishna's in danger. It's a role reversal. And Nanda Maharaj said, "Don't worry. With these very powerful arms," and he hit his arms, "I will destroy this demon that has put my son in danger. Yasoda, you can stay here. Everything will be all right." And Yasoda was hysterical. My son, she's in danger. I must go. And everyone is preparing to go to the river Jamuna, the Kaliya lake, and Balaram was just smiling, saying, "Krishna's just having fun. And part of his fun is giving all this excitement to Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, the residents of Nandagram." He was as calm as anything. But they all came rushing to the scene. And there's the cowherd boys, and there's the cows mooing. And Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda seeing the scene, and they wanted to do something. Krishna's in difficulty. So they wanted to enter the Jamuna River and rescue Krishna. So here's a close-up, I think, of that picture. And they were fainting on the bank of the River Jamuna. "Oh, my son!" So the elder gopis had to forcibly hold Mother Yashoda back, and Balaram forcibly stopped Nanda Maharaj from entering into the lake, because they were thinking, "I may die into the lake, but what's the use of my life if Krishna's in difficulty?" Part of the Leela was Krishna, he does this sometimes, in this Leela he does it particularly, he was putting the devotees into distress. In this case, the distress was not some worldly thing, but his own danger. It's a very unique Leela. And so they were experiencing terrible distress and grief. And this went on and on. And finally Krishna felt, "All right, I'll relieve them of their distress." So what did he do? He began expanding his body bigger and bigger and bigger. And as he was expanding his body bigger, Kaliya extended his coils bigger and bigger and bigger. Then all of a sudden Krishna became very small. He just jumped out of the coils of the Kaliya serpent and dove back into the water. And when he dove back into the water, he began swimming around in a circle around Kaliya, like, you know, circumambulating Kaliya. And as he was swimming around Krishna, around Kaliya, Kaliya was trying to bite him and chased him around and around and around and around, and eventually Kaliya became dizzy. And when Kaliya became dizzy, then Krishna jumped up on the back of Kaliya and began subduing the hoods of Kaliya. The text reads, "The Lord remained for some time within the coils of the serpent, imitating the behavior of an ordinary mortal. But when he understood that the women, children, and other residents of his village of Gokula were in acute distress because of their love for him, their only shelter and goal of life, he immediately rose up from the bonds of the Kaliya serpent. Having severely depleted Kaliya's strength due to relentlessly circling Sri Krishna, the origin of everything, pushed down Kaliya's raised shoulders and mounted his broad serpent's head. Thus Lord Sri Krishna, the original master of all fine arts, began to dance. His lotus feet deeply reddened by the touch of the numerous jewels upon the serpent's heads." What's the color of the palms of Krishna's hands and the bottoms of Krishna's feet? The red. And the hoods of the Kaliya serpent had jewels that glowed a red color. So the bottom of his feet plus the glowing red color of the hoods on his head made a fantastic dancing stage. So he was literally dancing upon the hoods and the jewels on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. Seeing Lord Krishna's dancing, his servants in the heavenly planets, the Gandharvas, Sintas, Sages, Chanaras, and wives of the demigods immediately arrived there. With great pleasure, they began accompanying the Lord's dancing by playing drums, such as mridangas, and I can't read the rest of them. And they were offering songs and flowers and prayers. So there's lots of paintings of Krishna's dancing. Kaliya had 101 prominent heads. And when one of them would not bow down, Lord Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would smash that stubborn head by striking it with his feet. Then, as Kaliya entered his death throes, he began wheeling his head round and vomiting ghastly blood from his mouths and nostrils. The serpent thus experienced extreme pain and misery. So you see this hood is raising up. So Krishna would jump up and pounce on the hood. And then another hood would come up and he'd pounce on that hood. And from the shore it looked like his dancing, but from Kaliya the weight of the entire cosmic manifestation was upon his head, because Krishna can be lighter than the lightest and heavier than the heaviest. So Kaliya was getting smashed and smashed and smashed and smashed again. Excellent artwork, huh? This is from another translation of Rupa or Sanatan Goswami, just a short verse on the sequence of the Leelas. I forget the title of that book. But nice, nice painting. Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all of Kaliya's 1,000 hoods. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from its mouth, finally recognized Sri Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead. The supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayana. Thus within his mind, because he couldn't speak, he was too smashed, took shelter of the Lord. When Kaliya's wives saw how the serpent had become so fatigued from the excessive weight of Lord Krishna, who carries the entire universe in his abdomen, and how Kaliya's umbrella-like hoods had been shattered by the striking of Krishna's heels, they felt great distress. With their clothing, ornaments, and hair scattered in disarray, they then approached the eternal personality of Godhead, and they began offering various prayers. Here's more of Krishna's dancing and the accompaniment of the demigods. Now come, and the residents of Vrindavan, observing this difficult situation. Some very, very old paintings indicating this pastime. Here's Balaram holding back Nanda Maharaj. As you can see, it's a very famous pastime. Many very, very beautiful paintings illustrating. And of course, different styles of painting according to the inspiration of the artist. There's the red jewels on his hood. Here's Krishna smashing the hoods that would enviously raise up. Krishna would let him have it, forcing the Kaliya serpent to bow down. So now we're going to hear, looks very peaceful here, the wives of the Kaliya serpent offering their prayers. They understood very well his nature and his condition, like wives will understand about their husbands. But they came before the Supreme Lord wishing to seek protection for their husband from the Lord. Their minds very much disturbed. Those saintly ladies placed their children before them, very clever, and then bowed down to the Lord of all creatures, laying their bodies flat on the ground. Of course, they were in the water. They desired the liberation of their sinful husband and the shelter of the Supreme Lord, the giver of ultimate shelter, and thus they folded their hands in supplication and approached him and offered very beautiful prayers. Here's their little children, little baby serpents, and the wives, and Kaliya. And there's Krishna on the hoods of Kaliya, dancing. So here are some of their very beautiful prayers. I'll read. The punishment this offender has been subjected to is certainly just. After all, you have incarnated within this world to curb down envious and cruel persons. You are so impartial that you look equally upon your enemies and your own sons. For when you impose a punishment on a living being, you know it to be for his ultimate benefit. what you have done here is actually mercy for us, since the punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all their contamination indeed. Because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he has assumed the body of a serpent. Your anger toward him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. Did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life? Well, in fact, he did. With his mind free of pride, no, he was filled with pride, and full of respect for others, is that why you are pleased with him? Or did he in some previous existence carefully execute religious duties with compassion for all living beings, and that is why you, the life of all living beings, are now satisfied with him? They glorify the greatest fortune attained by Kaliya, having received the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, for which even the goddess of fortune hankers. Nice painting. They continued, those who have attained the dust of your lotus feet never hanker for the kingship of heaven, limitless sovereignty, the position of Brahma, or rulership over the earth. They are not interested even in the perfections of yoga or liberation itself. The Lord, although this Kaliya, the king of serpents, has taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, he has achieved that which is difficult for others to achieve. Embodied souls who are full of desire and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benediction manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. And how fortunate is our husband. He's received it again and 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 again, dancing on your hoods. We offer our obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although present in the hearts of all living beings as the Supersoul, you are all pervasive. They're philosophers too. Although the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. And although the cause of everything, you are transcendental to all material cause and effect, being the Supreme Soul. Sounds like they've been studying Chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. Obeisances unto you, the Absolute Truth, who are the reservoir of all transcendental consciousness and potency and the possessor of unlimited energies. Although completely free of all material qualities and transformations, you are the prime mover of material nature. Obeisances unto you, who are time itself, the shelter of time, and the witness of time in all its phases. You are the universe, and also its separate observer. You are also its creator, and also the totality of all its causes. They're getting around to asking their favor. We offer our obeisances to Lord Krishna and Lord Rama, the sons of Vasudeva, and to Lord Pradyumna and Lord Aniruddha. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the master of all the saintly devotees of Vishnu. Here's the cows upside down. Here's where Krishna left his garments as he was climbing up the Kadamba tree and jumped off the branch. His garland too. Although he's got a garland here too. Obeisances to you, O Lord, who manifest varieties of material and spiritual qualities. You disguise yourself with the material qualities, and yet the functioning of those same material qualities ultimately reveals your existence. You stand apart from the material qualities as a witness and can be fully known only by your devotees. And they seem to know Krishna too, so they're also his devotees. Oh, Lord Rishikesh. Beautiful painting, huh? Master of the senses, please let us offer our obeisances unto you, whose pastimes are inconceivably glorious. Your existence can be inferred from the necessity of a creator and revealer of all cosmic manifestations. But although your devotees can understand you in this way, to the non-devotees you remain silent, absorbed in self-satisfaction. Some of you in the room here, I'm sure, are aware of this argument, one of the contemporary arguments against Big Bang cosmology and evolutionary theory is, what's it called? Intelligent design? Well, before those scientists got the intelligent design conception, the wives of the Kaliya serpent have it. It's right here. It's right here. Your existence can be inferred from the necessity of a creator. Obeisances unto you, who know the destination of all things, superior and inferior, and who are presiding, who are the presiding regulator of all that be. You are distinct from the universal creation, and yet you are the basis upon which the illusion of material creation evolves, and also the witness of this illusion. Indeed, you are the root cause of the entire world. O Almighty Lord, although you have no reason to become involved in the material activity, still you act through your eternal potency of time to arrange for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. You do this by awakening the distinct functions of each of the modes of nature, which, before the creation, lie dormant. Simply by your glance, you perfectly execute all these activities of cosmic control in a sporting mood. And he's certainly sporting on the hoods of Kaliya. At least once, a master should tolerate an offense committed by his child or subject. O supreme peaceful soul, you should therefore forgive our foolish husband who did not understand who you are. Beautiful paintings, huh? So, hearing the prayers of the wives of the Kaliya serpent, Krishna was very pleased. And he acknowledged their prayers and offered to relieve Kaliya of his sinful condition, which in effect had already been accomplished by placing his lotus feet upon his hoods. He had already become freed from all the sinful tendencies and reactions of those sinful tendencies, and even his envy was gone, the most envious of personalities, just by the touch of the divine lotus feet of Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan looking, and Krishna in the midst of this tumult in the Jamuna Lake. Thus praying, they requested the Supreme Lord to once forgive the great offense committed by their foolish husband. They surrendered to the Supreme Lord completely and wished to execute his order. He responded by immediately releasing the serpent Kaliya, who by this time had fallen unconscious. And when Kaliya slowly regained his vital force and sensory functions, breathing loudly and painfully, he addressed the Supreme Lord in humble submission. He also began to offer prayers. I didn't post them here, but they're very similar, not identical, but very similar and a little shorter to the prayers of the wives. So he offered his prayers to the Supreme Lord, repeating in a simple way some of the same messages they had spoken. And then the Supreme Lord spoke to him. He gave him an order, Kaliya, you are now relieved of all your sinful reactions, and I'm instructing you to go back to the place where you came, which was the Ramanaka Lake. And when you go there, don't worry, you left there because Garuda was chasing you, but Garuda won't chase you anymore. Why? Because you'll see from up above the marks of my feet on your head. And he'll offer his respect to you. He won't give you any trouble. So, Kaliya, along with his wives, accepted the instruction. They literally worshipped him because in their abodes, their places where they resided, they had lots of opulences. And with various presentations of fine garments, jewels, and valuable ornaments, a large garland of lotus flowers, they honored the personality of Godhead, Krishna, worshipped him, and with permission, he then circumambulated Krishna, and with his wives and the little kids, they went back to the Ramanaka Lake, which is described in the Krishna book as an island in the sea. Now, some people say that's in Fiji. And in Fiji to this day, they worship Kaliya Krishna. Very common. So after Kaliya had left, which meant the poison was now going to clear from the lake, Krishna came out of the water, having this fresh garland given to him by Kaliya and his wives. And as soon as he came on the land, everyone that was in great distress, it was as like a person who was unconscious coming back to life. Immediately, Yashoda and Rohini and Nanda came and embraced Krishna. And even the dried up poison trees came back to life. Nice painting illustrating the same. Now, at the very end, what's not in the Krishna book, but what's described in Braja, is this pastime took all day long. So it was by the evening time when Krishna came out of the lake, and his body was very cold. So he went from the Kaliya Ghat to a hillock not so far away, where is either 9 or 10 suns by his request came and shone on his body to make his body again warm. And that's the same hill where the Madan Mohan temple is. So those of you that will go to Vrindavan one day, very near the Krishna Balaram temple is the Kaliya Ghat, so for sure you'll go there. And then you'll also go to the Madan Mohan temple after that. And you'll see it's just a short distance, not so far. And Krishna became warm. And that was the end of the day and the end of the pastime. Here are the deities of Kaliya at the Kaliya Ghat in Vrindavan. There's a shrine or a temple, and inside is where the deities are. And this is where devotees are performing parikrama. This is the ghat itself. Now they have, you know, they put fences around it, and the natural beauty is somewhat disturbed. And here's Krishna dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent at that ghat. And here's the, at least what it is said, the original Kadamba tree that Krishna jumped off of. And there's a couple of places where they have made a Kaliya Ghat in a fountain. Now this one happens to be in, there's one in Pune, right? Has anybody been there? But I think this is in Warangal, in Andhra Pradesh, near the Warangal temple. This is taken from the Berkeley Temple. They have frescoes along the side of the temple, and the Kaliya Lila is taken from there. And there are murtis, where Kaliya Lila is being exhibited. This is in a museum. And other type of artistic depictions of this wonderful Lila. And by drama, dancers are performing. Krishna's dancing. These are the wives of the Kaliya serpent offering their prayers and Krishna receiving their prayers. In our ISKCON Fiji temple, there is Kaliya Krishna. And we'll just end with that. Kaliya Krishna ki jai. Any comments or questions or discussion? Yes.
And is there any relation between this and Vishnu resting on the Sesha snakes in the constellation of that?
Not really. Not really. There's the relation is there's a snake and a snake, but Ananta is the one. He was like the elder brother, so to speak, of Kaliya, and he is the one that was advised. He advised Kaliya where to go. That's all. That's all. Yes.
It's a very nice story. You remember like a lot of incidents like small past, which I didn't know about this study.
Okay.
In this material world, we somehow represent Kali with several moods of anger, passion, nerves, and all this. These kind of dominate over sometimes, like how Kali raised one of his sacrifices. Like we kind of raised them. Is there any way like how Krishna suppressed the moods? Anything we could do to bring those?
You want to have Krishna's footsteps on your head? When you become a little envious or... Is that what you're saying?
Like,
something like that?
Something.
Well, so here, I'll just go on. In Krishna Samhita, a book written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes that Krishna's subduing the demons or killing the demons in Vrindavan. They, just by hearing them and by Krishna's performing the pastimes and are hearing the pastimes, it helps the devotee remove obstacles. So that's what this next slide is. Kaliya represents brutal cruelty, maliciousness, pride, envy, and a snake-like crookedness. Turn the light out. Suja? He particularly tries to pour his poison into the hearts of innocent Vaishnavas, a Kaliya-like personality, which Krishna cannot tolerate. So the Lord kills him. So Krishna's subduing Kaliya is like that feature that can be an obstacle for a devotee to make spiritual progress. And similarly, here's what Bhaktisiddhanta wrote on this pastime, from printed in the Harmonist. It wasn't translated, it was written in English. Kaliya is the type of cunning and malice. He is the embodiment of unrelenting cruelty. There is no place for Kaliya in the happy realm of Vraja. Deceit and cruelty are as poison to the artless, loving nature of the denizens of Vraja. It is quite conceivable for the confidential friends of Krishna not to entertain any suspicion regarding the malicious intention of cruel and deceitful persons whose purpose is to poison them against Krishna. They may even unwittingly fall into the counsel of such evil persons. But Krishna is sure to rescue from his own wiles, rescue his own from the wiles of his enemies. So Krishna's protection is there for us. Now this is specific to the cruelty of others. So Krishna checks the cruelty to others, those who perpetrate cruelty upon others. This depiction of I don't like this picture so much because lights on again. Here's a little Prabhupada story that I heard Shyamasundar Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple, and his secretary for some time narrated. It's a long story, but the short part related to this last picture was Prabhupada was once in Los Angeles and received, he was sitting in his room and spinning the globe saying, where should we go next? He was having fun. And the devotees were saying, you know, this far out thing and that far out thing. And then someone came with his mail and opened up his mail, and there was an invitation to go to Mexico City. And Prabhupada immediately sat up and said, how far away is Mexico City? And let's go, get my visa. It's like everyone was mobilized to go. And it was some speaking program at a public festival. And there were like supposed to be tens of thousands of people at the festival. And when Prabhupada went to Mexico City, they brought him into it first to his room. And they situated Prabhupada in his room, and then they went to get their room, and they came back and opened the door. And Prabhupada was sitting there looking up, and just tears were streaming down his eyes. And they wondered what happened. And then he pointed above the door, the door frame was a crucifix. He said, take it down. Take it down. Saying, how is it that person who they adore and has given them everything, they want to see him in this way? Take it down. Krishna gives protection to his devotees. Now, sometimes his devotees, like Haridas Thakur and others, are put into difficulty. Prahlad Maharaj put into difficulty. Anyway, but Krishna's protection against such persons who would take one in a direction away from Krishna, if one is sincere, that the obstacles on the path of devotion are checked by Krishna himself. So this particular pastime is, there are other pastimes that deal with our own impurity, malice and envy. This is specifically others who would lead one away from shelter of Krishna. Krishna checks that. We can trust the fact that Krishna will check that and protect his devotee. Does that address your question? Okay. Someone else. Yes, Anju?
Yeah, Maharaj, I was thinking that Kalia's wife, they have said so powerful prayers. And
yeah.
Their devotion in the Kalia God.
Yeah.
So why they were so much, as a chaste wife, they were falling?
Because they were good wives. And because of being such good wives, they assisted their husband coming to a higher position. I certainly thought of that question too. It says something about they're elevated in knowledge, they're very pure in their devotion, and they're very faithful to a sinful husband. Because of those first two qualifications and added strength to the third qualification, which relieved their husband of his bad quality. So a faithful wife is a great asset for even, you know, a misdirected fellow husband. It doesn't mean in all circumstances if a man becomes, you know, incorrigible and et cetera, one should stay by his side in any case. But in this case, they did. In this case, they did. And because they did, great fortune came to their husband. I had that question also. Someone else? Suja. Hare Krishna.
I have two things. I was thinking like the demon Pralambarasura, Balaram was killing Devakasura, and because he had the reason that Lord Krishna cannot kill because of the descendants of Lord Maharaj thing. So, but Lord Balaram was killing Pralambarasura also, right? So is there any reason?
Not the same kind, no. Here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. Listen carefully. The demons that are killed by Krishna indicate how Krishna intervenes on behalf of the devotee and protects the devotee from obstacles. However, the two demons that were killed by Balaram indicate a special effort that must be made by the devotee. The stubbornness, the ass-like stubbornness that sometimes we find in people to stay stuck in their position of material activity, they must make some effort. Krishna, that's not the demon that Krishna killed. Balaram will give the strength, but the devotee must make special effort. And I can't recall Pralambasura. That was Denukasura. Pralambasura I can't recall. It's something that the devotee must make special effort, and then Balaram will give the strength to overcome that difficulty. This is all. In this section, it's dealing with overcoming of obstacles on the path of bhakti. Second is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear, it's not from this analysis that one should start to take the pastimes of Krishna as allegorical. This means that. Don't make that mistake, he warns. But rather literally, Krishna is helping the devotee to overcome obstacles. And he performs these pastimes even just by hearing the pastimes, remembering the pastimes, and all these beautiful paintings, seeing them depicted in this way, helps one overcome those obstacles. It's Krishna's mercy helping one to overcome obstacles, literally. I think we're going to have a little kirtan now.
I just want to say thank you,
Mother
Maharaj. Okay. Thank you so much for your compassionate and merciful.
Now, Prashant, can we move the screen? We're going to have, there's a picture back here, we're going to have a little kirtan.
For compassionate and encouraging us to ask a lot of questions and eagerly answering that.
You get a special award for the most questions asked.
Hare Krishna.